Hi, this is Aliza Licht, and this is Leave Your Mark, the podcast, where I brew fresh career advice with some of my most inspiring and successful friends. It's professional advice that you can action immediately, whether you're just starting out in your career or well on your way. With a massive to-do list and a large cup of coffee, I promise that you can get it all done and still have time to post about it. I always love connecting with women who are focused and passionate about building the careers of other people. And Octavia Gorodima, welcome to Leave Your Mark because you have done such incredible work.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
For everyone listening, Octavia is the host of the Audible original series, How to Change Careers with Octavia Gorodima. She shares her expertise and her insights on navigating career transitions and overcoming obstacles. And of course, she draws on her own experience as a career coach and author of Prep, Push, Pivot, who has coached thousands of professionals to achieve their career goals. She's also the founder of 2010 Agency, which is a career coaching firm that delivers workshops and group coaching to corporations across the U.S. Some of your clients, Octavia, are Google, American Airlines, Tinder, GM, Nike, the list goes on. And I think your mission, I mean, we're very aligned. You know, your mission is to guide professionals to unleash their potential and thrive in their chosen fields. And your book, Prep, Push, Pivot, Essential Career Strategies for Underrepresented Women, was a finalist at the 2023 Audio Awards for Best Business Personal Development Book. And of course, you're a LinkedIn top voice. You're a regular contributor to HBR and so many other publications. And I think today, you know, we haven't had a really in-depth like career advice episode in a long time. So I would love to just start a little bit with what is your number one thing when you're coaching people? What's the first thing you ask them?
Yes, I think the first thing that I want to know from anyone that I'm working with is, what does success mean to you? Because that can change over the course of time. And it's such a subjective question. You know, for some people, it's like, well, Octavia, I'm talking to you because I've been trying to get promoted and it's not happening. I want to be an SVP, a VP. I want to make it to the C-suite. For some people, it's like, I'm so unfulfilled and I'm frustrated and I'm just trying to figure out what I'm meant to be doing with the next 10 years. For other people, it's like, I thought what I wanted was this, and now I'm here and I'm leading a team and I don't feel like I'm respected or supported, or most of all, I just don't know what I'm meant to be doing next, even though I'm exactly where I want it to be. It can really vary. And I say that from my heart because I've been there. You know, there've been so many moments. I'm talking to you from Los Angeles, but, you know, I started my career 5,000 miles away in London like 2 decades ago. And there are so many moments where I thought, okay, this is it. This is it. And then you get to whatever it is, the job, the title, the salary that you've been holding your breath for. And sometimes it's like, oh, okay, that's great. But I think there's more.
Yeah.
And I'm endlessly fascinated by not what someone is doing right now, however incredible that is, but what do you want to do next?
So in thinking about what you want to do next, like, you're talking to someone who is not a planner, right? I have never had a strategy. I've never had a plan. So what about the people that are like, I don't know, like, how do you peel back the layers to sort of help people tap into that feeling that they're detached from? Like, maybe they're just going through the motions, but they don't really know.
Yeah. The first thing I ask is, what do you think you might be ready to let go of?
Ooh, I love that question. Tell me more.
Yeah, and that can sometimes be an array of things. I have no preconception as to what I'm about to hear next. And when I ask that question, people often just pause and really think, and they often say things that they've never actually said out loud before.
I believe that, but question for you. Why are you asking them that? Like, how is your brain working through that answer connects to what?
Yeah, because I want to hear what perhaps they don't want to be doing anymore. And sometimes it's, you know, a task that they have in their role. Sometimes it's the entire role itself. Sometimes it's a certain dynamic. Maybe it's a certain environment. Maybe it's actually a belief that they have that they want to let go of. Maybe it's a habit that they have that they want to let go of that professionally is holding them back. Whatever I hear, I can respond to. But then I also then ask, what would you like to do more of? Or what are you curious about? What do you want your career to feel like? Because sometimes the shifts that need to be made are not into a new role. It's just actually the experiences they want to have within what they are doing. And so as a coach, I'm endlessly asking questions. And then the work that I do if I'm working with you one-on-one is to really explore what you're curious about, what you're ready to let go of, and then create a plan for you to do those things. And you mentioned you're not a planner. Oh my goodness, that resonates with me because I'm not a planner either. But it's really hard to do this for yourself. And I became a coach because I was coached and I still am coached. And it's even with all of the strategies and all of the training and all of the skill sets and all of the things that I do to pour into others, it can be very difficult to have that objectivity.
Totally. So, okay. I am much older than you.
How do you know that?
I mean, I just, because my ring, I can tell from my wrinkles. I'm just assuming, but yeah. So I think that in today's work environment, there is, in my opinion, a lack of tolerance to sort of put up with certain things. So a lot of times people will be like, well, I like this part of the job, but like, I don't want to do that part. But the thing is, the job is the job. So are you coaching anyone on the idea of like, suck it up, baby, because this is the job, right? Like, I think there is a little bit of this, I don't know, like spoiled behavior of wanting to craft like your DIY job description, but like, you can't always do that.
Yeah, that is so true. And just for the record, I am the mother of a teenager and both of my daughters interned with me this summer. And I had to deal with exactly that. They were like, I want to do that. That's boring. What's next? Oh, and actually, you know, my younger daughter was like, you know, I think I'm ready to be the manager now. She wanted to be the boss of her sister. Right. So I.
Oh, my God. You had to set those girls straight.
I had to set those girls straight. But to your bigger picture point, yes, I do see that. And, you know, I'm doing work at tech companies and startups, and they're like some brilliant talent, like brilliant, you know. I've spent time on campus with seniors that are about to go into the workforce. Brilliant, brimming with so many ideas and energy. And it's so exciting. But yes, there are components where sometimes you have to do what you're told to do. And you do have to suck it up. And it can be really hard. And that's not just at the start of your career. The most senior leaders that I support, people in the C-suite, oh my goodness, that never ends in terms of even when you have the, you know, the P&L responsibility and your leading divisions, that will never end. There are always going to be components to whatever you do that are unpleasant, not exactly the things you want to be doing, that make you just want to take a deep breath constantly. And I think we have to accept that. And we have to accept that as we are pursuing whatever path that we want to do, and we're striving to do our best work or to have the autonomy or to have the responsibilities and to make the decisions. As long as we are working with others, there will always be components to that. You know, one of the ways I've addressed that personally is that I have what I call a portfolio career, where I tend to do different things concurrently. But even with that, you and I are both authors. You could assume, well, when you're writing a book, that book is yours, right? You are deciding what's in it. It's your voice, it's your work, it's your thoughts. Well, even with that, I'm not working in silo. No, I'm working with my publisher's team. There are so many stakeholders that are involved in my work, right? Yeah. And so you have to have the emotional intelligence about how to work alongside others, how to sometimes do the parts of your role that you don't like as much as others for the greater good.
Totally.
And I think also there's a lot of accomplishment that goes unseen. And when you are doing the things that perhaps aren't the number one things for you, but you're still doing them well. And that's something to be proud of. And it also helps you think and shape, okay, do I want to do more of when the opportunity comes, and really value those moments as well.
You mentioned a portfolio career. My friend Christina Wallace wrote the book, The Portfolio Life. So she's a big proponent of that sort of eclectic mix of things. Tell me a little bit about your book title, Prep, Push, Pivot.
Yes. So my book, Prep, Push, Pivot, is a career coaching guide for underrepresented women in the workplace. And I wrote the book I wish I'd had 23 years ago, when I was taking my first steps onto the career ladder and every step that I make from that point onwards. And it's divided into three sections. And so prep is really about laying the foundations wherever you're at, whether you're at the beginning of your career, mid-career, senior career, but laying the foundations for knowing your worth. It starts there. Knowing your worth is so important, especially in the moments when your worth is not being reflected back at you. And trust me, that will happen many times, not just when you're looking for that next opportunity, sometimes when you're in the thick of it in an opportunity. Knowing our worth matters. And the sad thing is, often we take the cues on what our worth is based on what other people reflect back at us, whether it's the salary that we have, the title that we have, the stretch assignment we're doing, the opportunities that we're leading, the validation that we get, the kudos when something goes well, the award we might win, whatever we might choose to share on LinkedIn, or those things matter, but it's what happens in between those things and what happens in the build up to those things. And especially if we're not in the places where we want to be yet, knowing your worth matters even more than ever before, because people can only see just one tiny perspective of you.
Mm-hmm. So how do you get people to know your worth?
So it's really important to fully embrace every single component of your work identity and everything that you bring to the table. And that is so much more than what's on your resume. I absolutely hate resumes. Resumes, you too. Resumes are so restrictive. They are so restrictive, but they serve a purpose of being the sales tool that gets your foot in the door for whatever you want to do next. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't need them. You know, I've coached people who have been offered roles and then they're like, actually, yeah, okay, now can we get your resume? Because we actually need to have something on file to put in our system, right? And that's the best way when it can happen, when someone knows what you do, you have conversations, an opportunity is there.
Yeah.
You can... But more often than not, people are having to put together a document that can get them that first conversation. And it's so restrictive. And even if you're at the start of your career, you're having to filter and pull the things together that you have to put on this document. And then as you progress, there's things that you have to take off, right? And things that you're looking and you're trying to be, okay, how can I align what I do to fit this opportunity? There's so much more that we bring to the table than what might go on a resume. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to track your accomplishments, your learnings, your progress, your insights, and to align those things with your career values. So in the prep portion of my book, I talk about knowing your worth, cementing your career values. It's a set of about 15 core questions that you can ask yourself to self-reflect on what matters for you. And if you want to do that right now, if you go to my website, octaviagorodima.com, and click at the top, you can read that first chapter right now, and it has that exercise. And it lays the foundations for you to really think deeply about what you want to do next. The push part is really fun. You could be pushing for a promotion. You could be pushing for that next role. It could be that you're thinking really big about even what you want to do next within the role that you have. And so the middle of the book talks about that. And it also talks about if you're navigating changes, such as maybe being a caregiver and balancing your career goals as well, and how you can do that. Or maybe you've stepped away from work for a while and you want to return and you're pushing to move your career forward after taking a step back. And then Pivot talks about how you can make a change within your career, whether that's a significant change, like changing direction, or smaller change in terms of that next step, but also how you can be pivotal to the careers of others. And that is really important to me, because we don't have to wait until we're really senior to be able to motivate, inspire, support someone else. There will always be someone who's looking at you and thinks, oh my gosh, I'd love to do that. I'd love to have a podcast. How could I make that happen? I'd love to write a book. How could I make that happen? I'd love to relocate internationally. I've done that twice. Like, how could I make that happen? There's always someone who would love to be in your space and have that experience. And it's really important to remember that as we continue to grow. So that's how I came up with the title for my book, based on those ethos.
I promise Leave Your Mark will be right back after a quick message from our sponsor. Are you ready for more career advice? Welcome back to Leave Your Mark. You also have written a 6-step plan to prepare for a career setback. What are the 6 steps?
You know, we're in such hard times right now. I've supported people who have been furloughed unexpectedly from their roles. And when that happens to you, you're like,
now what?
Is my role actually going to go away completely? And also, yeah, then what do I do now? You have zero control in that moment when you suddenly go from 40 hours to 30 or to 20 or, you know, every other day. It's a really tough space to be in. There's people who are thinking, okay, I remember I was on campus earlier this year coaching some seniors who were really excited about early offers that they were getting, but like, but look at what's happening in the world. What if this offer goes away? Mm-hmm. What will I do then? I've turned down other things for this. What will happen to me? And so thinking about, if the worst was to happen, what are my options? Because we always have options, even if we don't think we do in the moment. And before we can think about what the options are, we have to clarify, well, what are the non-negotiables here? What's my runway in terms of how long would I have if a job goes away? How much savings do I have? Where do I need to be physically? Do I need to stay in a certain location? What responsibilities can I not drop? Right? And knowing your non-negotiables is so important. It's so important. So there's clarifying that. Then there's, okay, where might I need help? What is going to be the thing that's going to be the hardest for me here? Where will I need help? Who could I ask for help? Who do I know who might have navigated something similar, if not right now, but maybe before? Mm-hmm. Who do I need to have a conversation with? Even just writing those names down. How can I take the best care of myself if I'm going through a hard time? Often when we're going through a hard time, we also are really hard on ourselves. You know, we're looking for jobs so we don't take a moment away from searching in case we miss an opportunity.
Yeah.
It's hard to sleep. We don't want to maybe even do something that feels like it's nice, because do we deserve it if things are bad right now? Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many things that are spinning at once, and you can't be your own best advocate constantly. Right. And if you are looking for a role, or in between roles, or dealing with a layoff, or you've asked for the promotion and didn't get it, you can feel a lot of shame. And you shouldn't, but it doesn't stop you from feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel so much shame. And so it's important to hold space to think about, if I find myself in a hard time, who can help me? And making that list and thinking about who you have conversations with. And sometimes you have to have conversations without an immediate expectation that one individual will hold the answer to everything. But when you talk to others, it sets momentum in motion. And it could be that person knows someone who can help mm-hmm. you. That just happened to me before talking to you today. I helped someone I don't even know, but we have a mutual connection
mm-hmm.
who heard what that person needed, thought of me, reached out to me. I'm like, oh yeah, I can help there. I can introduce them to someone I know. So it's like all these different degrees of momentum just through one conversation. In this instance, four people are helping with a situation.
So this is, I don't know how far in advance you advise people to like think about this strategy. Like when you hear there are changes happening at your company, or just even if everything's fine, it's almost, you know, in an emergency, like your to-go bag. If there is in case of emergency, like who are your to-go people? How far in advance do you tell people to start sort of patching this all together?
Well, often if I'm working with someone one-on-one, we're focused on the best case scenario. But I'll often hear things when I say what could get in the way of that. And they say, well, what? It could be this. And I'm like, okay, let's think about the worst. Let's talk now. Tell me, what's the worst possible thing that could happen here?
Yeah.
Right. And that often is easier to talk about than the best possible scenario, actually, because it illuminates all the things that are in the back of our mind often. Like, well, I'm really worried about this. And those worries could be real. You could be seeing layoffs happening around you, right? You could be a leader who knows that the shift's happening where you work, right? It's not always just in your head. It's actually things that could be real and present for you. And so we think about it, we talk it through, we contingency plan, and then we move forward, because you might not need to execute that contingency plan. Or even if you do, you might not need to take every single step within the worst case scenario. It might be that it's just a couple of things that you need to set in motion quickly. And also, when the worst happens, we're spiraling a little bit, and it can be harder to think clearly right in that moment because there's so many emotions to process.
That's 100% true. And that's really the best reason to think about it in advance.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's a bit like having your saving account that you have tucked away, or like you said, the emergency kit that I have in my car, you know, just in case. I haven't actually had to use that in a very long time, but there've been times in the past. And, oh yeah, I've had to. And so it's that kind of thinking. And, you know, I also encourage people just generally when I coach, what is the worst thing that could happen? Then I'm like, and what's the best? And then what's the in between?
Yeah.
What's the in-between scenario? And then they think about it and they're like, well, yeah, actually, there were lots of different ways this story could go. So many.
So much of career satisfaction and happiness and fulfillment is reliant on the type of manager one has.
Oh, yes.
So if you love your job and you love your company, but your boss is the problem.
Yes.
What do you recommend somebody do?
Yes. And this happens so many times.
Oh, no, I know.
So many times. More often than not, people want to leave roles because of other people.
Yes.
So much. It's an incredibly tough spot to be in. Sometimes that person is the person who hired you, actually. They actually chose you for your role or for their team. And then the relationship either breaks down or that person just perhaps has traits that just don't vibe well with how you work. Sometimes it's because there's been a shift, reorgs. Oh my gosh, so many reorgs have happened to so many people, you know, in this time that we're in right now. And then all of a sudden you've maybe got a new leader that's responsible for you, or maybe you shifted into another org, into a new team, and all of a sudden the dynamics have changed. It can happen in so many different ways. And what I encourage people to remember is that bosses can come and go, and you have to remember the bigger arc of your career. And even when I myself look back on the times when I've been in that situation, and it's really difficult in the moment, but when I look back on what I think about that time, it's actually what I accomplished during that time that not only matters the most, but is actually what's moved me forwards, right? And the fact that I had to navigate perhaps a certain dynamic, of course, makes it sweeter when I think about what happened subsequently and how I perhaps persevered or the work that I did. And, you know, there's a time that I found myself in that situation shortly after I started a role that I'd worked really hard to get. It was a really intentional career move that I'd made. And 1 week, less than a week in, I realized, oh boy, this is not going to be good.
But like, are you supposed to have a conversation with your boss? Like, are you giving upward feedback? Or
sometimes
what
you can, but sometimes you can't.
Yeah.
Right? So sometimes dependent on what's happening, it could be there's a misalignment or miscommunication, and having a conversation about how can I either best support you, or I'm experiencing this and I would like to talk through how to do X or Y. But sometimes if it's that person's traits, if that person is a micromanager, for example, you're not going to be able to change how that person leads. you can become more cognizant of perhaps maybe what some of the triggers might be and what might be happening when that person behaves that way. Is that person treating you any differently to anyone else? That's a key thing to perhaps consider. But if that person is perpetuating behavior pretty consistently, and it's not just with you, if it is with you, that's a different conversation, which I'll come to in a moment. But if it's impacting others as well, you're not going to be very likely to fundamentally change how that person operates. But what you can control is how you respond to that. And that's why getting really clear on what are my goals here in this time? How can I continue to pursue those goals despite what might be happening around me? How can I make sure I consistently do what's best for my job and for me during this time? And what am I learning from this? How can I be the best leader I can be? What am I seeing that I know I don't want to replicate? Mm-hmm. And then also it's important to make sure that you find a safe place for yourself. It's very important to have mentors, role models, people that you can look to and go to for growth and support if you are not getting that from your direct manager. Now, if your manager is treating you differently to other people, and if that is impinging on your ability to do your work, if you feel like you might be being discriminated against, you have to start documenting what happens and when it happens.
Yes.
Who is present? How did it happen? And it could be, once you start documenting and you start to see what's going on, that you need to have a conversation with someone in human resources about what is happening and having that addressed. That's a different conversation if someone is treating you in a way that is discriminatory. Your company has a responsibility to examine what you have documented, and it has to be documented. It can't just be, oh, this and then this. Well, when? Well, it happens often. Well, when? Yes, yeah. To be specific. And then it is important to be an advocate for yourself then. But even then, there will be components that are out of your control. You know, before I became a coach and an author, as a leader myself in organizations, I've had to put people on performance improvement plans, but that takes steps before you get to that point. And so even the people that maybe provided information or even just my own observations in terms of someone else having to have their performance addressed, there's still a lot of steps that have to go into that. And also, the interview process can be so tough. You are advocating for why you should do a role, why you should be the person selected, but you don't have any insight into who you'll be working alongside. You get a glimpse maybe into who your team might be during the interview process, but unless you've worked with some of those individuals before or already familiar with the organization, you don't know.
That's why it's so great if you could do a project or consult before, like date before you get married, because it is so true. And oftentimes in an interview process, everything is so rainbows and roses and everyone's wonderful. And then you get in there and you're like, oh my God, what did I do?
Yes, they tricked me. And this is why coaching can actually also just be so powerful. There are so many people that I've supported who have actually, they're in their first month, 3 months, 6 months in a role. And it's not just nailing the role, it's nailing the dynamics. You're having to, in real time, really do an audit of the relationships, the dynamics, the decision makers,
the politics.
And you are a blank slate. Yes, you worked on that, polishing that resume, and you did it, and you got the role, and you're coming in thinking, this is great. But actually, you are completely a blank slate. Completely. So all of the experience, expertise, insights that you are bringing in, no one really knows them.
That's true.
They don't. You have to prove it. And while you're trying to prove it and learn how to do the role and deliver results, the relationship dynamic piece is so important, because you'll ultimately only be as successful as the people around you enable you also to be.
When you think about your coaching clients overall, is there a pattern to one big mistake that everyone seems to make?
Yes, consistently. And I see this because I coach across industries. I've coached astrophysicists. I coach people in beauty. completely opposite ends of the professional spectrum. And I coach early career professionals as well as C-suite professionals at Fortune 500 publicly traded companies. So a whole range of years, decades of expertise. But consistently, I see people I work with underestimate what they bring to the table. And the reason that they do this is we are all so insanely busy. Our to-do lists are terrifying often to look at. We're constantly adding more onto them. We're constantly striving for the next thing. We're constantly looking at our peers and realizing, wait, that person's doing that. Oh my gosh, what's happening? I'm falling behind. I haven't done X, Y, or Z. And in some ways, that's great because we're wired to want to do more, to keep excelling, keep achieving, keep afloat, you know, and we forget. We forget the power in what we are doing and what we have delivered previously. There's one single thing that you can do that will transform your career, and that is tracking your accomplishments. You have to make that a consistent habit. At the end of each day, don't just look at your to-do list at what's next. Look at what you've accomplished. And don't just think, oh, okay, I did that. Actually, look at the worth in that. At the end of each week, reflect on, okay, what were the wins here for me? And if you feel like you had none, go back and look over your previous list. Because if you've made this habit, you can go back and look at what you were doing at the start of the month or the month prior. And at the end of each month, do your own self-assessment. Think about what you're insanely proud of from the month. What did you overcome? Your manager might not even know what you had to do to get something done. They won't know the details. Don't wait until you have your one-on-ones. Don't wait until you have your team meeting. Don't wait until you have your performance review. Don't wait. Those conversations are so short. 30 minutes, 60 minutes to discuss a whole year? What? No. How can you even begin to do that? And dependent on the leader that you have, those conversations aren't always as constructive or incisive as they should be. And even more so, having been someone who has led performance review processes for my team when I was working in corporate America, so much of those decisions are made before you walk in the room. So much.
So true. But okay, so if you're doing this every month, are you delivering back this information to your manager or what are you doing?
So first and foremost, the validation starts with you before you even share it with anyone else. Look at what you're proudest of. Celebrate that yourself. But yes, to your point, when you have your one-on-ones, use them intentionally in addition to troubleshooting what's happening right now, because that's what management is. They're looking to troubleshoot things, to keep things moving. And the things that are going well actually get less attention until they reach a milestone mark, right? They get less attention because that's working. And that's why people fall into the trap of thinking, well, I'm just doing my job, Octavia. When I reflect that back to the people I coach, they say, but this is my job. Yes, it's your job. But you are responsible for being the advocate for how you are performing within that and what the cumulative impact of that is.
That's so true. Oh, Octavia, we could talk about this forever. Yes. I think my last question, as you know, is always the same. How do you ultimately want to leave your mark?
Oh, my goodness. That's a great question. People often tell me that my energy energizes them.
I love that.
So if I can energize others, because we're all brilliant, we all have things that we do really well, things that we enjoy, things that get us excited, things that make us thrive. But there are also times when we're just like, this is so hard, or I'm stuck, or I'm dealing with this person, or I want to do this and it's not working. And so digging a little deeper in those times can be just so hard. And, you know, I am so thankful to have had people who have done this for me, who have energized me, who have given me inspiration and motivation to just try again or dig that bit deeper and to really believe in myself when others didn't, because people will clap for you when, you know, get that role or something amazing happens. But it's those times beforehand when we need the support the most. And so if I can do that for others, whether that's through reading my book or listening to my Audible series, or if we have the opportunity to work together directly, that for me is just so empowering for me. And I love it. You know, I'll be reading Fortune. I'm like, I see the work of someone I've coached. Or, you know, you're on social and you see like amazing. I get energy from seeing other people doing their best work because I know that's also just the beginning. It's just the beginning of what you're capable of. It's just a glimpse of what could be to come. So
I love that. Octavia, you're amazing. I feel your energy. So thank you for coming on Leave Your Mark.
Oh, thank you so much for the invitation. And, you know, I adore your book. I don't know if you can see, I've got all these stickers for all the things that I wanted to remember from it. And there's one thing that you share in there, which is just so true. And it's about, you really got to own your narrative because other people will otherwise decide that for you. So,
well, we're saying the same thing. We're saying it the same thing.
Yeah, it's so important. You know, own who you are, what you bring to the table, what you're passionate about, especially in the hard times, especially. Don't let go of that. And other people will catch up eventually.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Leave Your Mark. Leave Your Mark is a production of Leave Your Mark LLC and Money News Network. I'm your host, Aliza Licht. And if you want to learn more about how you can work with me or book my services, go to alizalicht.com. Don't forget to pick up a copy of my best-selling career advice book, Leave Your Mark, and my new book, On Brand, Shape Your Narrative, Share Your Vision, Shift Their Perception. Truly everything you need to build your personal brand or change the way people think about you. And just remember this, if change doesn't hurt a little, it's not change. Keep on rocking.